Welcome to the Let's Talk Energy podcast from EnergyNet. This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2023 in Nairobi, Kenya. Join us for this and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.
Good morning. Hello from Nairobi. We're here at the Africa Energy Forum 2023. My name is Mark Howard. I'm the deputy editor of African Energy Newsletter, covering the energy and power sector across Africa. And I have here my guest from the International Finance Corporation. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi, Mark. So pleasure to be with you this morning. I am Marcel Bruvillon. I'm the manager for IFC's infrastructure investment practice in Southern and Eastern Africa, based here in Nairobi.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And the IFC is, of course, a well-known institution to many, but the exact scope and remit may not be familiar to all of the listeners. So perhaps you could speak to a little bit of the IFC's work in Africa and your role on a sort of day-to-day basis.
So it's a power conference, so let me speak about the power aspects related to it. So first and foremost, we are the private sector development arm of the World Bank Group. So that means all we do has to have a commercial angle. Our goal is to attract more private sector investments to the continent, to bring the ingenuity and the entrepreneurship into the power sector, into utilities, into essentially the infrastructure sector. And there's two overriding themes, right? One, of course, is the theme of energy transition and the promotion of renewables. And the other one is how we can bridge the energy access gap on the continent. So on the renewables, to give you an example, and it's quite exciting, we have recently closed a very, very large project in Egypt, a gigawatt of renewable power called Abydos and Amunet, wind and solar, with a sponsor, Amia Power. Amazingly low tariffs of 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour. Through the project, a coal-fired project, which was also in the planning, was cancelled and as such not considered necessary any longer. So big success. I think it was the lowest tariffs achieved in Africa so far and amongst the lowest on the continent. Talking about the access gap, so I think what gives me a lot of hope is all the efforts which are currently going in the theme called distributed generation. So it comprises the technologies solar home systems provide, so-called commercial industrial solar, essentially rooftop installations, but also larger installations for commercial clients. And thirdly, what is called or dubbed mini grids. Although the term is a bit misleading because nowadays we're not talking about electrifying 50 houses any longer. These mini grids are more rural utilities with 5,000, sometimes 10, 20,000 clients, where a private sector investor comes in, puts up a generation mostly as a combination of PV, sometimes wind and batteries, and pulls the wires and meters. You know, so it's really small utilities, and I'm going to speak a bit more about those later on, what needs to be done to get them commercial.
Thank you very much. A really interesting overview. So as you've addressed, the IFC is looking to leverage the best opportunities and encourage private sector involvement, which is trailblazing a path in a lot of ways and showing investable opportunities, especially in the renewable space. Yeah, very interesting. Thank you. And you touched, as you mentioned there, on mini grids. And we know that the IFC is actively backing sort of scaling up mini grids, as you say. And they're not so mini anymore, as you say. It's possibly should be a better term for them, as integrated distributed utilities. A lot of people term them different things. Yes, perhaps you could speak a lot about this very exciting space that the IMF's involved in.
Yeah, so I think the sector is about to reach a tipping point. There was a recent study done by ESMAP, or sponsored by ESMAP and the World Bank, which projects that a cost-reflective tariff of mini-grid operations of 20 cents a kilowatt hour is within reach, within, let's say, 5-7 years, by 2030, I think they say. Now, that's amazing, okay? Cost reflective means no, not subsidized. If you can provide sustainable, green, and stable power in rural areas of Africa for 20 cents, you have a winner, right? Right now, most of these rural areas are actually powered by diesel. I have grid connection. Just to truck out the diesel to these areas costs a lot of money. It's cumbersome, it stinks, it makes noise. It's just not good, okay?
And the emissions are very bad for you, yeah, of course, not to say
course,
the least.
Of course, yeah. So you can give people this kind of power for 20 cents, it will also create a lot of commercial activity. Lots of people say, oh, you know, we don't have demand, so how can we, you know, make money? Well, you have to create the demand, right? I mean, there will be no commercial activity if you don't have sustainable, stable power supply. So as soon as you have it, there will be hammer mills, there will be grain dryers, there will be all kinds of commercial applications which previously were not possible. So I'm very, very optimistic with regards to that. It's also technology driven. There needs to be scale. Right now, the approach is still too fragmented. There's donors here, there's donors there, it's uncoordinated. You need to set up a regulatory environment which makes sense. Commercial questions like, you know, how do you protect the private investor when the grid comes? You know, so and there are methods and precedents of how to deal with that. So our scaling mini grid program is a bit of a one-stop shop. So we advise governments on the regulatory environment. We help governments run tenders. We believe in tenders, okay? So, and we believe in scale. So we want to get the large commercial players interested in this market as a main tool, really, to bridge the access gap in Africa.
And as you say, open tenders, competitive tenders are so important in driving down the cost, not just for the government, but eventually for the tariff that, you know, the retail customers will pay for their power, which is so important. And you touched on how competitive solar mini grid tariffs are becoming. And that hasn't always historically been the case, has it? Diesel has still been cost competitive, and that's why a lot of people defaulted to it almost. But now this is such an exciting innovation, and you're sort of you're outcompeting diesel by something like 4 or 5 cents per kilowatt hour.
Or more,
yes, but that's very conservative. Yeah. But you know, at the very least. And that's such an exciting innovation. And in terms of these sort of scaling mini grids, governments, countries you're cooperating with, can you speak a bit to sort of where the uptake has been, sort of, or people have been most interested at the moment?
So we have a very large program in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So we're working with government to bring essentially 180 megawatts to 1.5 million people who currently are not benefiting from stable supply. So it's one of the first programs. We also have a program coming up in Madagascar in close support with the World Bank, which has made available a large subsidy amount. You still need today to make mini-grid power affordable about, I'd say, 50% capex buy down through subsidies necessary to scale up. So there are other programs under consideration in West Africa as well, but I cannot be too specific about the countries at this point.
Thank you. And Madagascar is an excellent example, as you've just mentioned, of a country that's particularly in rural areas historically relied on diesel generation. But it's often assumed that maybe diesel or other thermal forms of generation have high availability factors. But that's not, of course, always the case. And, you know, we know that in Madagascar, many of the older mini grids, even ones that were partially hybridized with solar, have struggled because the tariffs are not cost reflective. And inevitably, there's costs for maintenance over years. And this is a criticism that many people have made in the past of mini grids, is that they've been rolled out in a somewhat haphazard fashion. And yes, the capital investment was there, but perhaps that was subsidized. And in the long term, it's difficult to keep them going as a commercial entity. So clearly your program addresses this. Perhaps you could speak a bit more to that and the longevity you're envisaging.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, between us, there's also another aspect here. If you look at corruption, the fuel value chain all over the continent, in many other parts of the world, is inherently a source of corruption. So at the end of the day, it's the people who pay, right? So if we can replace thermal fuels by PV and battery, we also provide more transparency, accountability into systems. But it's also an issue because you have vested interests, right? Fuel value chains, many people live off it. Now, if you want to change it, it doesn't happen from today till tomorrow, right? So, but I think it's a noble mission to do this. Let me mention another aspect of technology. It's not directly related to mini grids, but there is also a program driven by a Norwegian company called Scatec. It's called Release. So Release is a containerized, mobile, and quickly deployable solar and battery system. It can been set up very quickly, and the advantage that it's you can actually demobilize quickly means that you don't have to go through the whole exercise of project financing these assets. You have a very simple lease agreement with government, and you don't need to go to the security registration and all these lengthy and expensive processes required still for doing classic onshore IPPs. So we are supporting this program. It's rolling out in Cameroon and in the Sahel in its first instance, and we hope to scale it across Africa, also contributing to bridging the access gap on the continent.
Absolutely, a fantastic capability. For the benefits of the viewers and listeners, they're sort of almost like shipping containers, like ISO, standard ISO containers, and they're sort of plug and play, but also modular. You can have several of these containers in one location, so they're very adaptable to changing conditions, as you say, and of course renewables, so there's great benefit there. So we've been talking perhaps at the more smaller scale in terms of raw capacity, at least, not to minimize the impact that mini grids have, which is tremendous, but obviously the IFC is also supporting some very large renewable projects in Africa, and particularly within your remit. There's been substantial announcements in terms of hydropower recently in Mozambique. Perhaps you could speak a little bit to that project, which is a fantastic
project.
Thanks for
mentioning this, Mark. So we've done a lot on hydro in the last couple of years. We've closed Nachtigall in Cameroon together with EDF. We're working on the development of Mpatamanga hydro in Malawi, 350 megawatt, again with EDF and Scatec, a transformational project for the country. And now the next big one, I would hope, is Mpandankua in Mozambique, 1,500 megawatt. Government recently announced a winning bidder, a consortium comprising, again, EDF, with Total Energy, Sumitomo, and Kansai. So I'm super excited about this project because I think it's the opportunity of really addressing the energy transition, but also energy crisis question we have in Southern Africa. I mean, South Africa alone needs to decommission and replace, 20-ish gigawatts of coal-fired power in the next, 10, 15 years. None of the countries in the SAPP region currently has any surplus other than Mozambique, a little bit, okay? All right, we have Cahora Bassa, who has been exporting, but if I exclude Cahora Bassa, there's less than 100 gigawatt hours, which Mozambique currently has. Building Mpandankua in connection with the gas resources Mozambique has is a fantastic opportunity to play a key role in the energy transition of Southern Africa. It's a super complex project. We're talking about $4.5 billion for Mozambique, a big amount, but 2.5 for the dam, about 2 for the transmission line. All the donors will need to chip in. All the TFIs will be required. We hope to put up commercial tranches as well. And a super exciting project. It also, it's the dynamic of, I'm sure you know Cahora Bassa, right? So this dam, which has been operating for many decades, the power purchase agreement with Eskom expires in 2029.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
So now there a combined solution can be found. Mpandankua will come into operation around 2030, So there's going to be a package of both projects being able to export to Southern Africa, but also helping address growing demand in Mozambique.
Absolutely. As you say, a fantastic project because it's going to provide stable, renewable grid power to Mozambique, which is great and necessary. But as you mentioned, there's other countries in Southern Africa, perhaps even Eastern Africa, if there are further interconnections that will benefit from this tremendous amount of hydropower capacity that's going to come online. Yeah, a wonderful project and yeah, great success for everyone involved to get it to this stage, because it's not easy developing projects of this scale, as I'm sure you can attest to. So I believe that's it for our time today, Marcel. I'd like to thank you very much for your time and your really rich insights. It's fantastic to see the work the IFC is doing in the renewable space in Africa. I wish you all the best with the rest of the projects that you're working on at the moment, and we'll hopefully hear some more big deals closing very soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. Thank you.
This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2023 in Nairobi, Kenya. Join us for this and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.